Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, welcome back to another episode of the Madhouse Podcast. As always, I am your host, Mad Max. Today's episode, we're going to be talking about, honestly, I don't even know if I want to talk about this, but I know I have to. But today we're going to be talking about Quiet on Set, The Dark Side of Kids TV. This docuseries dropped on HBO Max last week, and if you haven't seen it by now, I recommend go watch it. But if you're a fan or a kid, or if you grew up watching Nickelodeon in the 90s, I highly, you know, viewer discretion is advised, because this was a heartbreaking, depressing, bone-chilling fucking documentary about the shit that went on behind the scenes at Nickelodeon in the mid to late 90s to the mid to 2000s. And it, man, I really don't know where to start. You know, it really started with Dan Schneider, who created a lot of the hit shows on Nickelodeon. Like All That, The Amanda Show, Drake and Josh, Victorious, iCarly, Sam and Cat, you know, Zoe 101. And the idea that, you know, one man is in charge and everything like that, and kind of soaks his ego in a lot of ways. But, I mean, a lot of people had been saying, like we all knew that, you know, Nickelodeon had a pretty good track record, you know, for a long time. Whether it was their animation, whether it was their live action stuff, it ran strong for a very long time. Now, unfortunately, their animation in the 2000s relatively got worse, because SpongeBob had come out, and then, you know, they didn't have really any shows to book around it. They had Invader Zim for a little while, but that show kind of went away, and they never really had any new material that lasted as long as fucking SpongeBob did. I mean, SpongeBob's still on to this day. But then the real life shows, the live action shows, started coming out, and you got more of those than you did, because I think, I want to say Nickelodeon was trying to catch up with Disney, because Disney has started doing that as well. You know, they had That So Raven, Lizzie McGuire, Even Stevens, and, you know, a lot of shows like that. And then came this producer-writer by the name of Dan Schneider. And, you know, he wasn't a well-known actor, so to speak, even though he had, you know, he had a background in theater and everything like that. But he comes on this project and he writes the pilot episode for what was to become All That. Now, if you don't know what All That is basically Nickelodeon's kid version of Saturday Night Live or Mad TV or In Living Color. It's a sketch comedy show with a bunch of fucking teenagers and kids and things like that. Now, a lot of the initial run in the All That series spanned from, I want to say, like 96, 97 to about 99, because during that time period, we were introduced to people like Kel Mitchell and Kenan Thompson, and then, of course, Amanda Bynes was also there. Now, Amanda Bynes was probably the one person, or the one girl from the show that kind of exploded onto mainstream media after that. I mean, she was so popular that Dan Schneider created another show just for her. You know, she got her own sketch show, basically, which was The Amanda Show. Now, because of The Amanda Show, certain people who were featured in the background of All That and everything like that kind of got pushed to the forefront. And people like Drake Bell came out on that show and things like that. Josh Peck came out on a few episodes and things like that. So that was kind of the whole idea. Now, Drake and Josh's popularity spurned off and it became Drake and Josh. And the same thing happened with Miranda Cosgrove. She got her big break on Drake and Josh. And then sure enough, it broke off into iCarly. Same thing happened to Jenny McCrudy. She was on iCarly, but her popularity kind of took off. And they took two characters from one from iCarly, one from Victorious, and they created Sam and Cat. So all this stuff was going on, and then you start to realize that, you know, maybe Dan Snyder's not who a lot of people thought he is. Now, it was around 2017, 2018 that these rumors were coming out that Dan Snyder was not the guy that he had always thought to be. And, you know, this was right around the time the Me Too movement had started. And a lot of people were saying that he was so vindictive and power hungry and, you know, really derogative, you know, really using derogative language and just real mean-spirited to women and people of color in Nickelodeon. A lot of people who were on all that kind of got that. Whether it was the first half of its run or the second half of its run, you had all these kids come in there who were taking advantage publicly. You know, you had the kid who was Nose Man, and when you see his costume, you know, he has an enlarged nose, and his shoulder pads do kind of look like dildos and things like that. And for some reason, they thought Dan Snyder's the one leading the pack and the one writing the show, you can't really tell him, hey, they don't look right, you know, and things like that. And for a long time, it always dissipated. You know, they had all these sexual innuendos. Now, in the 90s and 2000s, watching it as a kid, as a teenager, you don't see that. Like, you don't see the innuendos behind that. But then as you get older, into late teens and more into adulthood and things like that, you're like, oh, yeah. It's kind of cringe to watch back. Because, and like I said, initially it's played for laughs, but some people just have a really bad sense of humor. And it can go either way. Now, in this day and age, those kind of jokes wouldn't fly at all. And, you know, it really, really kind of rubbed people the wrong way now when you look back at it and things like that. Then to find out that, I mean, three guys were arrested for child molestation. Three child predators were working for Nickelodeon. And like, what's surprising to me was that Dan Snyder was never arrested. And a lot of people thought that he was the one doing it. But then again, it was shocking to see that he wasn't. But it was more shocking to see that he kind of knew about all these people and their background and didn't say anything. Like, what was the point? The most heartbreaking part at this point, now everybody's talking about it now, the most heartbreaking part in this documentary is when Drake Bell steps forward and admits that he was sexually assaulted by Brian Peck. It was by far the most heartbreaking thing. And then the fact, the emotional part comes in when Drake's father, who was serving as his manager. Now, Drake Bell had been a star. You know, he had been a kid star for a long time. You know, he had been on TV before. He was in the movie Jerry Maguire. He had come out in a couple of episodes of Seinfeld and Home Improvement and, you know, a lot of big hit shows in the 90s, but he really didn't get a chance to pop as a kid star until he joined Nickelodeon. And it was like his teenage years that this whole issue had started. And, you know, when they interview Drake Bell, it really, really gets... This is where it gets very uncomfortable. And I don't know whether or not, like, you can tell he's uncomfortable talking about it and reissuing it. But I think because, you know, he's kind of put it behind him and he's kind of dealt with it both emotionally and mentally and things like that because of therapy and just a lot of support that he's been getting. And I'm pretty sure he's gotten, you know, even more support now that this documentary's out. But, you know, for a kid to spiral out of control like that, you know, a lot of people had said, you know, these kids tell you the truth, but kids tell you the truth no matter what. But then when they become teenagers or late teens, you just think it's all nonsense. You know, a lot of people said Corey Feldman tried to tell us the same thing, and, you know, they kind of blacklisted him and in a lot of ways because of where we are now. We can be a little bit more forgiving and look back at certain moments and say, that's the problem. Now, you know, they really got into that part of the documentary, and it was really, really, it, that, to be honest, that's the most uncomfortable part, in my opinion, when Drake Bell walks on the set and he tells his story. And, man, I fucking broke down when his dad was telling his side of the story. His dad, it's like the parent in me now. It's like, we were such fans of Drake Bell when he was on the show and things like that. And then his dad gets on the set and watching everything like that, and you just realize that out of all these people, these parents who were trying to do the right thing by their kids and everything like that, Drake Bell's father, you know, when he breaks down, I was breaking down. I was just like, wow. You know, that's the most heartbreaking and horrifying thing you could ever imagine. The fact that this man weaseled his way into this teenager's life and basically ostracized him from his own family only to sexually assault him. And then the guy gets arrested and only gets like 6 years in jail. And then the fucking outpour of people supporting this man who was sexually assaulting this teenager is unfucking canny. Like, you really are defending him? And then they had people retract what had happened. Because certain people aren't interviewed in this entire documentary. Like, Drake Bell comes out, and they have a lot of people who are on all that, a lot of people who work behind the scenes of all that and the Amanda Show at Nickelodeon, really speaking out and really what's going on. But they never interview Dan Snyder. His responses and his thoughts are through text, as are some of the people who support Brian Peck. And it's like, you don't have the balls to kind of come up here on TV and things like that. But then again, I think that would have made the problems even worse, because it's fucking, it's depressing, it's horrifying, it's tragic, and things like that. But then, as they get into the 2010s, like, post Sam and Cat. Like, if you ever, I didn't really watch that show, because by then, you know, I was already in my late teens, you know, and things like that, and I was kind of growing out of that Nickelodeon show. I mean, I was a fan of Victorious and things like that, and but never really a fan of Sam and Cat. But, you know, the stuff that they had them doing was really, really, like I said, there's those moments where looking back, it looks innocent enough, but then, you know, as we get older, you know, and we start seeing things a little bit differently, or we start looking at the world in a way that is both enjoyable and understanding that the world is not always going to be this way. And in a lot of ways, you're enjoying it because you're a kid. But when you get to the real world and realize how the world works and how certain people of a certain age are, you realize that, yeah, this is really uncomfortable for kids, especially in that age frame. You know, they had people, Katrina Johnson, who was one of the original cast members of all that, was the sweet, innocent girl that they had. And because she hit puberty during the show, and then Amanda Bynes kind of came in after her, she was slowly phased out just because she hit puberty, just because she started looking more like a teenage girl than the 10-year-old or the 11-year-old girl. And I was like, wow, you know. I think Brian Hearn, I think is his name, or Heen, or something like that. He was like the token black guy on all that, because by then guys like Kenan and Kel had already left the show and they'd already become adults and were making names for themselves on TV. You know, so he was in there for a little while, and it didn't look right what they were trying to have him do, and just, it really wasn't. You know, I knew him from other movies like Pootie Tang and Hardball and things like that. And I totally forgot he was on all that. That's where he got his start from. And it's really unfair that he only lasted maybe one season before he got the boot. But then he got the boot because his mother was doing the right thing and being the mom and trying to look out for him. And, you know, that was tough to take and things like that. Then they got to the Jenny McCrudy side of it. I think what really blew the lid off of the whole Nickelodeon situation was when Jenny McCrudy's book came out, I'm Glad My Mother Died, she gives it, she wrote a tell-all book that really kind of ostracized her from the world of show business in a way that was, it was like a young girl kind of going crazy. But, you know, fast forward, you know, 8 years later, and it's starting to make sense. You know, it's starting to, you understand why. And that's what's more, that's what makes this so depressing as a viewer. The fact that these people were literally telling you, telling us, this was not fun. They took advantage of us. They abused us. And yet nobody listened. And then they let it happen to children and nobody did anything about it. You know, it's like the state of California, just as long as people are making money, you know, nobody's going to say anything. And that was the heartbreaking part. Like, Drake Bell went into a downward spiral into substance abuse, alcohol abuse. I mean, the guy went bankrupt so often and things like that. You know, some of the people, they never interviewed Amanda Bynes. You know, Amanda Bynes went into a downward spiral of her own, you know, things like that. Jamie Lynn Spears, a lot of people were really big fans of the show Zoe 101, but the reason why that show was so short-lived was she became pregnant like at 16 or 17, and, you know, Nickelodeon wasn't having that, so, you know, that show kind of came and went. You know, this documentary was just real eye-opening, and it's very, very tragic that it took us 8 years. Because, like I said, it was around the 2017-2018 mark that Jenny McCrudy's book had come out. Then all the rumors had started spoiling out about Dan Schneider. Then all the stuff about Drake Bell was really starting to, you know, resurface once again and things like that. And, you know, nobody really took it seriously. And I always felt that there was a little bit of a hint at it. Like, dark side of anything, you know, whether it's Dark Side of the Ring, Dark Side of Comedy, Dark Side of the 90s, you know, all the shows that Vice had done, really kind of did that. They were having people who did it within, who were within the business, and, you know, tell their stories. In Dark Side of the 90s, you got a little bit of a glimpse into it. You know, it wasn't, you know, yeah, there wasn't really a full-fledged episode about it, but they peeked into it a little bit with some of the TV shows that they were, you know, they were talk about, you know, like Jerry Springer, like reality shows, or you know, some of the whole situations with Macaulay Culkin and things like that. And, you know, they kind of pressed onto that and things like that, but they never really kind of, they kind of glossed over the Nickelodeon show. They mentioned kids shows, but they don't be specific. This documentary goes full-fledged, and it's only 4 episodes long, and, you know, in the 4 episodes, it gets uncomfortable to watch with every episode, but you cannot stop watching it, because you want to hear the stories, you want to see how far these people went, you know, before pleading for help, and nobody came. And that, I think that's what makes this so heartbreaking, is the fact that these parents were trying to do the right thing and let the kids follow their dreams and be on TV and things like that, but yet they were taken advantage of. And then the parents that were doing the right thing, being there for their children and looking out for their children and protecting them from these fucking child predators and things like that, they get the short end of the stick. And, you know, sometimes doing the right thing is going to be, sometimes doing the right thing saves you in the long run, but ignoring the fact that wrongdoing has been done is just as bad as not doing anything at all. And this was very uncomfortable. You know, from after the first episode, it's uncomfortable. Once you get to the second episode, it's tragic. Once you get to the third episode, it's so fucking heartbreaking. And then by the time you get to the last one, you just hope and pray that there's a light at the end of the tunnel. And I think, to be honest, the only light at the end of the tunnel is that now these kids who are on this show are speaking up about it, and people are actually listening rather than ignoring it. You know, now that these kids are adults, you know, you can, you know, and, but, you know, some of them people say, like, yeah, it was fun being in front of the camera. But then when the show's over, that's when, you know, that's when it got intense, and that's when it got uncomfortable. And, you know, you can't really do anything about it. You just feel for these kids, you know. You feel like a loss of innocence is there. You know, what we, the audience, feel is nothing compared to what the cast and crew really had to go through. And it's really, really unfortunate because as an audience member, as a fan of Nickelodeon, like, honestly, I felt violated because it makes me realize that my entire childhood has been a lie. It's like, wow. While I was trying to be entertaining just to have some fun watching TV, these kids on the show were being sexually assaulted, verbally abused, or, you know, just treated like shit no matter at every corner. And, you know, what can you do about it? You know, you hear things and you don't know if they're true or not. But then, you know, like I said, time goes by and then everybody's in on it. And then if everybody is saying the exact same thing and people are agreeing with it, if you hear a rumor, my whole thing is like, if you hear a rumor, you know, it starts off as a rumor, but if 10 people are saying the exact same thing, or if there's evidence that this has happened to other people from this one individual or about this one individual, then, you know, might want to do some digging. And the fact that these people on social media were doing the digging before anybody was actually doing anything was just mind-boggling to me. You know, Jenny McCrudy's book was so pivotal and she got a lot of heat for it. But, you know, it's necessary because, you know, people like this do not need to be working with children. You do not want to put your children in an endangerment the way the kids were in Nickelodeon. You don't ever want that. As a parent, as an outsider looking in, that's the last thing you want to do. But as a parent, you know, oh, hell no. I would raise hell and burn this entire fucking studio to the ground. You even look at my kid the wrong way and things like that. But, you know, a lot of, you know, some parents didn't want to do that, you know, especially back then in the 90s or in the 2000s. Nobody was, that wasn't really a thing. You know, a lot of people, you know, because we were skeptical about a lot of that stuff. Corey Feldman had been telling us for years that he had been sexually abused. You know, the people who worked for Harvey Weinstein had said, yeah, don't work for that man. He just, you know, he'll take advantage of you just because, you know, he's trying to get off on something and things like that, you know. But it doesn't make sense, you know. Time has to go by before it starts making sense. And, you know, it really paints a horrifying picture. You know, it's like the, it's like this, somebody had like a, it reminded me of the moment in the movie Watchmen, when Rorschach tells the joke about man goes to the doctor saying he's sad. The doctor recommends go see Pagliacci, the famous clown. He's in town. He'll make you feel right up. The man burst into tears and said, Doc, I am Pagliacci. It's like, yeah, these kids put on a face because they have a job to entertain and they enjoy it. But behind the face, something much more sinister is going on. It's almost like the Joker. He paints the face of an evil clown, but you don't realize there is something sinister about that. And there is something innocent about it as well when you watch these shows. And, you know, for these kids were taken advantage of physically and mentally. And to hearing this now, it feels like us, the audience, the fans of the show, are now being taken advantage of it. Because it's like, wow, you know, why would they, you know, do something like that? You know, it's like, this was a very eye-opening documentary. It was really good, but it's hard. It's a tough watch, especially if you're a fan of Nickelodeon, especially if you're a parent. You know, it is tough, but it's a great story. It's a great story. It's tragic. It's heartbreaking. There's a little bit of a happy ending at the end when you realize that a lot of these people are doing okay and they've gotten over it and they're making sure that it doesn't happen to anybody else and things like that. You know, people are speaking up. And, you know, I can only hope and pray that stuff like this stops in Hollywood. But, you know, who knows at this point. But, yeah, that's going to go ahead and do it for today's episode. If you like the episode, be sure to follow the podcast on all podcast outlets, whether it's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Pandora, Google Play, Odyssey, Reddit, wherever you're getting your podcast from. Be sure to follow the podcast on all social media outlets, Instagram and X, the Madhouse21. Let me know what you guys thought about Quiet on Set. You know, what was your favorite show on Nickelodeon? What was your favorite part of the documentary? Whatever the case may be, let me know. Instagram and X, the Madhouse21. Be on the lookout for more episodes as they come out. We got some stuff coming out this weekend. Obviously, Ghostbusters is coming out. Roadhouse just dropped on Prime Video, so definitely looking forward to a lot of that. So be on the lookout for that. Be on the lookout for anything and everything that comes out of this podcast. And, of course, as always, be sure to embrace your inner madness.